Andrew.
Did you like to sleep?
Yes, I do like to sleep. It's kind of hard now with our 11-month-old not sleeping, about 2-hour stretches.
The 16-month-old that we have is still not sleeping as well. It's loads of fun. He wakes up like every hour. Well, I take that back. He wakes up at least once a night, right around 3 a.m., which has made things with the twins that we're fostering right now a little bit easier.
I mean, you're already up.
I'm already up. Exactly. I'm used to not sleeping, so it's okay. It's okay. I'm feeling it a little bit today, though. That's why I wanted to introduce the show like this, just to let everyone know that Ryan's a little tired today, but we're going to make it through.
I'm gonna say, I had a decent night's sleep last night. A couple nights ago, it wasn't too great.
Well, you're a jerk. Brag about it. But we also have a very special guest for today's show. Before we kick things off, Miss Tess Wigginton is with us, and she's a very special person in my life. She's one of my favorite teachers that I ever had.
Oh, stop.
I'm dead serious. You were the fun teacher from computer lab in elementary school.
Okay.
Played lots of Oregon Trail.
There you go. Everybody dies.
I don't know. I never really made it past like the first river. We always drowned in the river.
Right.
Did you ever make it past the first river?
I've made it to the end.
No way. Is there an end to that game?
Well, as far as that was too long ago for me to remember, but I'm pretty sure I made it to the end of that.
I always thought it was like Tetris. It just went on indefinitely because I didn't know that Oregon was a real place until many years later.
I love hearing from former students that they find out that cholera is a real thing.
Yeah.
Dysentery.
I honestly thought the game was just trolling me at the time. But it just really wanted me to be upset that all my people died when I'm in fourth grade. But also, you were also a teacher with me in high school, and we did media. I think we had media arts. Creative media arts or something that we did.
Media communications.
There it is.
Yep.
So, but you were always the fun teacher, and you were fun enough that I added you on Facebook as an adult. And I think that is very cool too, that, you know, Facebook, for as creepy as it has become in recent times, is still a wonderful tool to stay in touch with people like that.
I agree.
And you are one of those people I would always want to stay in touch with. And you posted this very interesting story that we're going to be discussing in just a few minutes, right here on the Dad IO podcast.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Andrew.
And we are two guys navigating fatherhood in a digital society.
Life supplies the inputs.
And we supply the outputs.
I'm Kier from In Defense Of, a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Okay, Tess posted this video and it caught Ryan's attention, and he then shared it with me. And it's from the Nature Valley. And you were wondering, why is a company like Nature Valley promoting this topic? And the main question was, where they asked three generations, what did you do for fun?
So before we discuss it, we're going to go ahead and play it. It's pretty short. It's about 2.5 minutes long. So we're going to play the audio, because you don't really need to see the video to get the gist of it. And then when we come back, we'll discuss what the theme of this video was. So hang tight here. Here we go.
When you were a kid, what did you do for fun?
So we go blueberry picking, for instance. That's so cute. But
it was true. We grew watermelons, plantains.
I found an old sign which was big enough for me to sit on. It made a great toboggan. It was very slick and very fast.
I had a few fish in my basket, and I looked up on this bluff, and here's this black bear sitting there watching me. If he starts chasing me, I'm going to keep throwing the fish out of my basket until he's gorged and he won't bother me.
And what did you like to do for fun?
You know, you go door to door, get a group of kids, and you play lots of games, hide and seek, just going out to the field and playing baseball.
And we build these massive forts, you know, the kind that you can actually sit in and play in, you know, with our friends. And it was just really wonderful.
So what do you like to do for fun?
Video games. Definitely.
I like to go on my phone,
text some email.
My favorite thing to do in the world is definitely watching videos and playing video games. Those take up so much of my time.
3 hours, or 3 to 4 hours a day.
Same.
5 hours straight.
Just last week, I watched 23 episodes of a TV series in less than 4 days.
I forget. I'm in a house. I have parents. I have a sister. I have a dog. I just think I'm in the video game. I completely get lost. I would die if I don't have my tablet.
Whenever I feel upset, I'd play video games and I'd feel normal. It's really wonderful.
When your daughters grow up, your great-great-grandkids, what do you think will happen if this trend continues?
It's scary to think that they'll never have to leave the house.
Cindy grew up doing a lot of the things that I did and enjoyed, and I see what my grandsons are doing today, and it's mind-boggling.
By the time they have kids, it's going to be a really different environment.
I actually feel a little sad because I feel like he's missing out on what's out there in the beautiful world.
Special connection with nature. I think it's innate in all children, but needs to be nurtured.
Okay, so that's the video that you had posted on Facebook, Tess.
Mm-hmm.
It caught my attention because it goes back to a topic that Andrew, you and I talked about on one of our earlier shows, like 7 months ago. This has been going on for a while now.
We talked about screen time.
We talked about screen time. And that, I mean, at the end of the day, that's kind of the gist of what this ad is getting at, mm-hmm. is discussing the sort of addictive properties that technology can have on us. So first and foremost, what was kind of the inspiration? What caught your attention when you saw that video? What stood out to you?
Well, the first thing that caught my attention was I completely identified with that middle generation. Because that's how I grew up. You know, the woman who said that they made forts that they could play in and that kind of stuff. That was the world that I grew up in. And that's what caught my attention first. But then seeing the huge contrast between the first two generations and all the interactivity of what they did as they grew up. And then the young children saying, the girls, I'll die without my phone.
They were very overjoyed.
Oh, well, preteen girls. Hello. But, you know, the kids, the boys who are saying that the one young man who binged however many episodes of whatever it was in one day and playing hours and hours of video games. I thought, wow, that's huge. Just because having been a teacher, I've seen over 20 years the effects of kids who are, I don't want to say, you know, completely married to tech, because we all are, let's be honest.
But we're surrounded by it right now. I mean,
yeah, exactly. I mean, well, and I'm certainly not anti-tech. I love it. I use it. I am a big fan of it. But I think that at certain ages, as they're developing, kids need a little bit less of that and a little bit more interaction with each other. And that's what really, you know, and that I think was brought very clear in the commercial, that that's what they were getting at.
So I want to actually come back to that point that you just made. We'll come back to that in a few minutes.
Okay.
So quick question too. Did you ever battle a black bear like the one guy did?
Sadly, I did not.
I mean, I want to say that I think even with or without technology, I don't know if that guy would have made it. I don't know if his strategy was a good one.
Well, I mean, if you're out in nature and you have a bucket full of fish and there's a black bear, you throw the fish and you go running.
I wouldn't throw the fish.
Yeah.
He probably would have got distracted. The bear.
I don't know.
Not the fish thrower.
I feel like I would still be too slow to outrun the bear even after he had gorged himself on fish, but I'm not a good runner. Regardless.
Yeah.
So we talked a lot about this on our Screen Time episode, and one thing that I think that immediately kind of struck me is, I mean, obviously, I think that they chose very polarizing ends of the spectrum to make their point with this.
Mm-hmm.
And for our generation, Andrew, with us, we were born in the 80s. We really kind of grew up in the 90s. And when you mentioned, too, Tess, about, you know, seeing technology, how it's impacted kids in school. Mm-hmm. I want to say that for us in high school was probably one of the first generations that really started having cell phones regularly.
Yep.
I remember I got my first cell phone when I was in like sophomore year or something, or mm-hmm. junior year. And that was kind of like when that was becoming very, very prevalent. Mm-hmm. So for our generation, I think it's interesting because I remember growing up, we talked about playing video games and stuff growing up and how we built memories around those types of things. But I also remember going outside quite a bit, too. Mm-hmm. Do you think, and I guess I'll throw this to you first, Andrew, because with your kids right now, and they're kind of in that prime, like, want to play and get into everything ages. Do you see that your kids have like more of an attraction to like running around and playing? Do you see that they're more into like, hey, there's something on TV, I want to sit down and watch it? Where do you kind of think that like with your kids being 4 or 5 years old, where does that lie with them at that age?
With our two oldest boys, because our two youngest are almost too young to really see this impact on them. But our two oldest boys, I would almost want to say borderline addicted to tech. And even me trying to do other things, it's kind of hard with how everything's going on. And I almost feel bad that I'm not able to, stop them from having this like addictive tendencies to that. The other day we were just doing a yoga video for YouTube on our TV just to try to get them to calm down. And our oldest son, he went up to the TV to hit the play button on our like 40-inch screen TV just to like, because that's what you do. It's this touch screen. But when we were growing up, we couldn't think of touch screen being even a technology.
When you got here, you were visiting with our little guys that mm-hmm. we have, and I made a joke. Like, I had Google turn the lights up for me. And it cracks me up because our little guy, the 2 year old, or I'm sorry, he's only 17 months. I don't know. My brain's just gone. It's been a long week. He looks up at the lights. As soon as you say the word Google, not only does he know how to say it, and you said your little guy too, he's 10 months old, right? And knows how to say Google.
Yeah. Our 10 month old and our 22 month old, they still say Google.
And it cracks me up because they're going to grow up in a world where that's very commonplace. When we were on vacation and we didn't have that, we're turning the lights on with the switches. And he acted like that was sorcery, that someone turned the light on from a switch, because we don't ever use our switches anymore. They're just standing there. So I think that like the takeaway that I kind of had from this, and I'm mm-hmm. interested to see like where you're going to go with this, Andrew, because I think that I might end up being on the other end here. When I watched the video, it did strike me as, I get the point that they're making. Mm-hmm. Do I think that children these days are playing outside as much? No. I think that that's pretty easy to discern. That's pretty easy to see. However, I think that drawing attention to the video games and the tech addiction kind of stuff. You mentioned that there's kind of an age range for that where does it kind of start to become acceptable? Mm-hmm. And starting there in your mind, because mm-hmm. you've been around elementary school kids up to high school age kids. Mm-hmm. Where do you see that there is an age, or kind of what's your thought on like what's the right age for when it's okay for those things to become more important in your life mm-hmm. or become more commonplace in their lives?
Boy, that's a tough one, Ryan. I'm not sure I would want to put an age on it so much as a purpose for it.
Ooh.
Because while it still distresses me to see a phone in an 8-year-old's hands, you know, kids on elementary school playgrounds with their phones, I can't even, I don't even know how to process that. But I guess to answer your question, I think the world that we live in is so technology centric that we're not doing them any favors by keeping them away from technology. It's got to be in their hands. It's got to be in front of them. This is the world they're going to live in. As you pointed out, your little guy thought switches were sorcery. Whereas when you told Google to turn the lights down, I said, ooh, creepy, because that's new to me. I don't, you know, that's something new to me. But I don't have that. But they're growing up in a completely different world. I think the idea of moderation and controlling, that's a terrible word. That's not the one I'm reaching for, but monitoring what they're doing, how much they're doing it, and making sure that they're more well-rounded. That's what worries me, is the lack of balance. When I see children like the ones in the commercial, which, as you said, it was designed to evoke that response that, oh my God, they're playing that much video games. But when you see that, you think that child is not getting a balance. If you give your kid a couple hours a day on video games at 10 years old, but then say, okay, now what? How about if I take you over to so-and-so's to play or go out and play or whatever? Then it's a healthy balance at that point. I guess, you know, if that answers your question, that's where I am. It's not so much an age as what you're doing and how you're balancing it.
And I agree with everything you said too. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very important point, and that is definitely one thing that we discussed too, that mm-hmm. it's all about moderation. Mm-hmm. It's all about, like you said, monitoring, which mm-hmm. I would argue that is probably, I would say that's probably my sticking point mm-hmm. of making sure we're monitoring more of what's going on these things mm-hmm. than anything else. But I guess for me, I look at it and say, A, if you look at the kids that are in the advertisements, mm-hmm. I would argue that any of those kids, if you took them outside mm-hmm. and said, hey, go play, mm-hmm. I think that they're still going to know how to do those sort of things. They're still going to know how to have fun. Mm-hmm. I think that like technology has become, not only is it a source of entertainment, mm-hmm. they see us do it as parents. And when they see us do it as parents, it becomes, well, that's just the normal thing you do as you get older. So, you know, setting an example for kind of what's acceptable, not letting it become kind of overpowering in our own lives is important. But I do think too that if you look at some of the things where the little girls are talking about, oh, we're like emailing and things like that. Hey, look, I'm going to argue that, well, I don't even email that much anymore. Mm-hmm. So, but that's an important skill to have. So the fact that they're comfortable doing that, to me, that says, hey, you know what? When it comes time to write a resume one day, they're probably going to be pretty good at writing resumes if they're already emailing and stuff. If we want to talk about the education system and how it's failing our school-age kids on those sort of things, yeah. probably a different yeah. topic, but yeah. also very valid.
Yeah.
But I think that even going there, it's yeah. almost important for kids to know how to seek those things out on their own.
There you go.
So having that technology available, mm-hmm. no, I don't think that, Andrew, you're probably going to be buying your, like when your kids turn 6, they're probably not getting their own cell phones, although it would be funny.
No, they don't have their own cell phones. And I would probably push for it sooner, but as Tess said, if it had a purpose for it. And my wife has said with some of the stuff that it's a disservice to our children to keep this away from them, especially with everything that's going on. You have all this automation coming to manufacturing jobs and all over the place where tech is kind of working its way into the center of everything. So I'm kind of pushing tech a little sooner probably, but I'm mm-hmm. trying to find those purposes behind it.
Mm-hmm. So what's a purpose that you found for? Like, what's a purpose that you are pushing for right now?
I mean, it's kind of hard right now with my kids being, my oldest son is 4. So it's kind of hard for him to comprehend that. But we're trying to find games or something on the iPad that will teach him how to count, like try to actually teach him certain tasks or skills besides just playing a game where you're racing around a track and not really learning anything.
I think that there's lots to learn from Mario Kart. I'm going to throw that out there. I don't know if that's a fair comparison, Andrew.
I mean, but there comes time when you just need to relax and kind of do one of those things where you're not trying to learn anything. So I don't feel like there's a bad thing about that. But if you have like our kids trying to binge watch a show, like that gets a little too much for a kid. I don't think a kid should binge watch something like that.
I mean, I don't know if I could have binge watched, what do you say, like 14 hours of a show in yeah. like a day and a half or something. That's
and
impressive.
He seemed so proud of it.
He was very proud of it. It must have been a good show. But I mean, I can't even remember the last time that I sat down to watch TV long enough to even consume one show in its entirety. And I'll be perfectly honest, when I sit down and watch TV at the end of the day, usually I have my phone out and I'm playing on the internet. I don't even really care that much about television anymore. So I think that, but again, I guess that goes back to, you know, the example that we set for our kids too, because with our little guy, he's 17 months old. He's very aware of what cell phones are. He's very aware of what tablets are. Mm-hmm. He probably knows how to, I guarantee actually knows how to work like the remote to the Apple TV and turn the TV on and stuff. Cause he sees me turn it on and there's the Baby Shark song you heard Baby Shark?
I've seen it referred to.
It's awful. Don't.
Okay. All right. Good. I'll stay away.
If you have young children,
you know it.
Yeah.
You can't avoid it.
Yeah. You can't avoid
it. We were on vacation and like there was children singing it in the pool on vacation. I'm like, no, I went on vacation to get away from it.
Guys, your generation had Baby Beluga. Okay.
I don't
Do you remember Baby Beluga? Maybe that was Kate. My daughter is a little bit younger than you guys. That was dear Lord.
I know the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles theme, yeah. So I got that one.
Oh, yeah.
G.I. Joe.
I could probably still sing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
There you go.
I liked it.
What was your song, Andrew?
I can't remember back that far. I don't have the greatest memory when it comes to these things.
So, he knows, we'll turn that song on for him. At the end of the day, like, if he's winding down and we need to buy ourselves, like, 15 minutes, we can put Baby Shark on. Mm-hmm. And it is like he's witnessing the opening of the Holy Grail when that thing comes on television. Mm-hmm. And now he's to the point like where if he sees a remote, he grabs that remote and he's just like, nope, make it happen. And he'll probably get it there almost. But still, he sees, so he has that, he knows that there's something there that he wants. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if we were awful people and wanted to just sit him down in front of the television for all day, we could do that and he'd probably be content. Mm-hmm. Clearly, there's medical reasons not to do that, and psychological reasons not to do that for your children. But I think that it is still, you know, there is a very alluring power of technology and television and these kind of things. And that's why when I see that, when I watch the video and you know the kids are talking about, like you said, like how proud they are of these very mundane and lazy things that they're doing. Mm-hmm. That was kind of the one that was what struck me more is like, okay, are we teaching our kids that it's okay to be proud of something lame? That to them is like super exciting. But maybe that goes back to even for our generation, Andrew, of, you know, like we look at that and like that's not that exciting, but I can see where if I had the stuff that kids have today, mm-hmm. I probably would have found that stuff cool back then.
Yeah, I probably would have been inside and not really doing anything.
But would you have really though? Like, are you telling me like when you were growing up? I don't know how much did you go outside and play a whole lot. I mean, I was outside all the time, even though there was Nintendo and stuff inside, and I still loved playing games and all that kind of things. I was still outside a lot growing up.
Yeah, I was outside a decent amount.
And my thing is, I think that the other side of this coin too is as parents, and we talked about this too on our show. Would you be comfortable with your kids riding their bike down the road or down the street in your neighborhood? Like down to the end, like down all the way to the end and back. Or would you be cool with that?
I mean,
at like 8 years old.
The hard part about that is I keep thinking of our oldest son. He is very impulsive and I don't know if I would trust him to do it just because of his personality. Like he might see a rabbit and just like forget what he's going and chase the rabbit. So, but our second oldest son, probably, I mean, he would have the inner discipline to not really veer off of the boundaries we gave him.
Would you, so that's a good point. Like, obviously the maturity of your kids plays into it. Would you be okay, I guess, because there is this, I feel like there's a greater fear nowadays than ever before of, you know, we can't let our kids go do this stuff. You know, we can't let our kids go outside and play. When I was younger, and I'm talking like from a very young age, I remember, and we didn't even live in the best neighborhood or anything like that, and I remember running all over, riding my bike and all that kind of stuff, and went way further than probably what my parents would have been cool with if they knew I was going. But that was just kind of fun. It's fun to explore those things. But I can say that as a parent now, like even though we live in like a nice neighborhood and things like that, and I don't like have those fears, but it's kind of always in the back of my head because it's kind of a societal thing. That, well, I feel like I have to worry because I'm supposed to. That is it okay to let kids go that far now? Like, is it okay to do all of those things? Where with you, Tess, like, did you let your kids go all over the neighborhood? Were they outside constantly?
Well, my oldest didn't like outside, so there was that. But the younger one, yeah, she was outside a lot, and yeah, it never bothered me. I always wanted to know, like, if she would want to go somewhere, like I'm going to go to somebody's house, I'd ask her to tell me that first. But I wasn't ever really concerned about anything other than normal parental concern for their safety.
Would you be concerned nowadays?
Absolutely.
What about nowadays is different than when your kids were growing up?
I think it's my age. It's not, you know, we can all say, and I know that this is a popular thing, that the world has changed, and it has. If I can go back even further, when I was a kid, at 8 years old, I would walk about a mile to the main street in Steubenville, pick up a bus, take the bus downtown, go to the movie for the day, walk up the street to where my grandmother lived, hang out with her for a little while, catch the bus home at 8. And this was a normal thing. That can't happen anymore. You would never trust a kid that age out by itself.
I wouldn't even do that myself. I'll throw that out there. That sounds terrifying okay. to me.
Oh, it was fun. I loved it. I loved it. So I guess, you know, there's that element of the world has changed. It's a dangerous place now. I'm not sure it's any more dangerous than it ever was. I think it is a little bit more dangerous than it was before, just because we've got media everywhere that for people who have those sort of proclivities, it normalizes it for them. You know, when they see all this stuff on movies and whatever else, and, you know, the people seeking fame, that, hey, this will get me fame by snatching a kid. So I don't know if it really is any more dangerous than it used to be, but it feels like it is. That plus, you know, as we're talking about kids who spend so much time with a screen in their hand or in front of a screen, may not learn the same coping skills with other human beings that kids who don't spend as much time with screens. And that, I think, is where my concern lies, is that interpersonal skill development. And I don't see that happening.
Would you say that as a teacher and mm-hmm. you know, seeing as the years have gone by and it's mm-hmm. become more prevalent, is that something that you've seen, or is that like an example you can draw from for that to say that that's the way you feel that way?
That it actually is. That's where I'm getting, you know, the material that I'm working with, is when I started teaching in elementary school, as you said, cell phones were a brand new thing. Nobody at the elementary school had them at first. And then, you know, as the years went by, we had kids that were toward junior high that, you know, one or two of them would get them. And, ooh, you know, the flip phone. Woohoo.
The old razor.
Yeah. Oh, God, yes. And then gradually, as it became normalized, what I saw was kids who weren't as adept at dealing with each other, unless it was through this, you know. And then moving on to the high school, you really saw it hit there, definitely. That it was almost laughable to watch kids go after each other on the phones when they were sitting 2 feet from each other. Whereas the stuff that they would say to each other online, they probably would not say to that child's face, and didn't, because they were sitting right there. That's my concern.
So, okay. I agree with that point too, mm-hmm. wholeheartedly. I mean, my wife and I do that. I know, mm-hmm. Andrew, you and your wife probably do the same thing too, right? Have you ever had a text message fight with your wife?
Yeah.
We all have. Because sometimes, obviously, there's a lot more anonymity to mm-hmm. the internet than mm-hmm. what there is to face-to-face conversations. Mm-hmm. But even when you know the person that it's coming from, it is easier to kind of speak your truth or speak your mind when you know that you don't have to worry about the subtext of whatever is coming out of your mouth. It's just straight things.
There's a huge difference between looking somebody in the eye and saying some of those things to them than to type it in on a keyboard. It's just a huge difference.
And to me, I would almost say that that is another important reason why I think that there is an argument for, I hate saying, because I guess at the core of it, I don't agree with the idea of like giving young children cell phones and things like that. But I would say that as this technology, I mean, it's already prevalent. It's not going to get any more prevalent than it is. Mm-hmm. But I think, to me, there is an argument to be had mm-hmm. for teaching our children at an early age how to be acceptable. What was the term that we used for this before? Do you remember what it was? The digital citizenship, I think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's similar, or kind of what we had. I can't remember exactly, but
it was the industry buzzword.
That's definitely it.
When you brought that up, that was the first time I'd heard it. This is like mm-hmm. a common thing now, even.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I think there's an argument for that because, again, it's not going away. Mm-hmm. We've already accepted that. Mm-hmm. If the cell towers went offline tomorrow, we're all doomed. Every one of us.
Yeah, and I think it's hard to teach a kid how to read some of those subtext and text messages if they don't know how to communicate face to face.
Bing, 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 bing.
That is a valid argument.
There's a lot of like subtext that goes when you're talking to somebody. Because what's the statistic they're throwing out there? Like 70-80% of conversation is more than just the words. It's body language and everything. And with text messages, you don't really have that as much. So how can you read into the subtext of that if you don't know how to communicate with somebody face to face?
What about something like FaceTime? Is that different? Or does that count as a face-to-face conversation? Or does that count as still a barrier in between you?
I would say it's better, but it's not the same.
Yes, any thoughts on that?
I'd actually say that that's pretty much the same.
Pretty much, really?
yeah.
Even though you can see like facial.
No,
features,
that's what I mean. I would consider that to be face-to-face.
Oh, okay, okay. So yeah. you definitely think that's better than text messages.
Way better.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Which is interesting because I feel like most people don't utilize that as much as they could. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I would think that that would be more appealing for a lot of people, but then I feel like there's also the vanity aspect of it that because it's on your phone, it's weird. But if you would walk up and see that person in public, it wouldn't be weird to have a conversation with them. But like the idea of having a conversation like in your home with them on the phone, there is a kind of like this weird like voyeurism to it or something. I don't know how to explain it, but that's how I feel. Like,
yeah,
when I FaceTime, like usually the only people I would ever do, I like FaceTime with like you and your wife. And usually it's because we're telling each other something funny that the kids are doing. But I never just like have a conversation with someone in it that way, because I do feel like that would be kind of like strange to me, I guess.
Yeah, you're kind of hiding behind that wall of not being able to see the person.
Right. Mm-hmm. I don't want you to see me like sitting on the couch eating Doritos or something. Like, I would rather you hear the subtext of the crunching bag in the phone as opposed to like seeing it. That's where I'm at with that one. So I think that there is an argument for doing it earlier and an argument for not doing it earlier. Mm-hmm. But as we as a society move forward, there's always going to be that next thing that comes down the pipeline that you and I are going to be offended by, like as we get older, Andrew, that our kids are going to be doing, and they'll probably be having the same conversation one time. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we go back in history, the last big technological advances that spurred this exact same conversation was the modernization of the telephone. And then we had the modernization of television. Mm-hmm. And these same topics, these same conversations were being had was like, is this corrupting our youth? What's going to happen to these people who are just talking on the telephone all day? Is the television box stealing our souls? It was all that. So I think that like we sort of like regurgitate this conversation like throughout the ages. Is there like, where did you, like, when you were growing up, did you have, like, television? Mm-hmm. I feel weird asking that question, and I don't know, like, what, like, how to phrase it in a way. I apologize. Because it wasn't as common. I mean, yeah. Obviously, until, like, the 80s or so, it was right. When it really hit, you know, everybody mm-hmm. had television in their home. Yeah. Did you see that there was anything different, like for you growing up and for your generation? Did you see that, like, the same kind of things came up to where maybe, like, your parents or your parents' generation, mm-hmm. or your parents' generation, yeah. kind of had those things?
Well, for my parents' generation, it was radio, you know, and there wasn't, it was a non-issue, I guess, because they'd sit around the radio at night and listen to your show of shows or whatever it was.
The spoken word is very offensive when it comes out of the radio. Who listens to that anymore?
But I guess, you know, if we're talking about something that takes all of your time and all of your attention, radio is not quite the same thing, I don't think, especially radio in the 40s, because no one thought to program anything for children at that point. It was always geared to adults. My generation, you're right, we were new with the television, with that fancy TV. I was one of the first kids in the neighborhood who had one in my bedroom.
Holy moly.
I know. It was a little black and white thing. Yeah.
It had like all 13 inches of.
Yes. Nice. And rabbit ears in a turquoise plastic case. It was quite fancy. But when I was growing up, the only thing on TV for kids was Saturday morning cartoons. Everything else was adult programming, not meaning, you know, adult programming, but it wasn't geared to kids. It was okay if kids are watching it, but it wasn't geared to kids. Whereas now you've got Cartoon Network and Nickelodeon and Disney Channel, all these things that are designed to keep kids' attention 24 hours a day. So I'm not sure it's exactly a fair question, because there wasn't as much available. I watched as much as I could on Saturday mornings as a kid, but there just wasn't anything else on.
And that's a very fair, and that's a mm-hmm. good way to look at it too, that it wasn't really a thing that you were going to sink hours of your time into,
right.
Where nowadays it's pretty easy to sink hours of your time, exactly. Like wasting away on the internet or something.
I'm just as guilty. I turn the TV on for background noise.
That's what I do too. Yeah. I do the exact same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's comforting.
Well, and yes. One thing too, that I think that some of this tech has done, it has, from what I've noticed, done away with Saturday morning cartoons. Like
the
Saturday morning cartoons that I'm used to aren't on anymore, because you can pull up whatever you want on YouTube mm-hmm. or anything online and just start watching that at any time.
Mm-hmm. But that's kind of where they've gone to be fair. Because, I mean, you're right. Saturday morning cartoons, I think the last one aired on like the WB or something 5 or 6 years ago. And it was legit like the last airing of, you know, Saturday morning cartoons as we know it. Mm-hmm. And as nostalgic as Saturday morning cartoons are to us, the funny thing about them is that if you go back to the history of them, the reason that they existed was strictly marketing, especially in our generation. When you look at He-Man and G.I. Joe and those kind mm-hmm. of stuff, all that stuff only existed because, hey, the marketing guy said, we're going to cram out this new awesome space Jeep thing, sell it to kids and make it look cool.
Well, they have that with Paw Patrol now.
Oh, dude,
we got into that on our Screen Time episode, but every new thing they do on Paw Patrol, they are doing it just to sell something on the shelves, it seems like.
That's what cartoons... Really? Oh, you are missing out on a fascinating world of cartoons that are out there now.
I think every, 6 months, they have like a new season, I guess, of Paw Patrol. I don't know exactly the schedule they have it on, but there is a new vehicle or whatever that they are using in the show that it seems like a week later, it's on the shelves.
Oh, it was on the shelves a week prior. You just didn't notice it yet.
Exactly.
It hadn't aired yet. They hadn't done something cool with it.
I have an issue with companies using children like that.
But they've been doing it.
Forever. They've been doing it for years. You're absolutely right. This isn't new. When I watched cartoons, they were selling cereal because the cartoon character ate the cereal.
Well, of course.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it wasn't quite as sophisticated. They've gotten more sophisticated. But you're right. They've been doing it forever.
And, you know, obviously there's the comment of, well, yes, that's gross and that I shouldn't be allowed to do it. But, I mean, I would still sit down and watch old cartoons just for the sake of they were awesome. And
oh, yeah.
They're a big part of my childhood, basically.
Sure. Well, and to kind of play off that nostalgic, I've subscribed to the Boomerang streaming service they have, and I've branded that as my kids' as Saturday morning cartoons, anything from that. It has like the old Jetsons and Flintstones that I remember watching.
Well, of course, because I remember this too. I mean, when the Cartoon Network first aired in the early 90s, that's all it was the old like WB cartoons and those kind of things. And yeah, it was awesome because that was the first time I got to experience those things. Obviously, you know, there was reruns and that kind of thing, but I never experienced the first run of the Flintstones or anything like that. But it was cool to see something that my dad would walk in the room and be like, oh, hey, I'll sit down here and watch The Simpsons. But, like, you know, if I tried to turn on, like, Ren and Stimpy or something at that time, that was not something that was going to appeal to him. But it was cool because my dad, being a very, like, straight-laced kind of guy, would sit there and just completely laugh his butt off watching, like, Bugs Bunny or something. I'm like, this isn't even funny, but he's a him.
Yes, it is. It's the best humor ever.
I think that, it's one of those things that when you saw what was considered funny, like, in our generation, then you look back, you're like, well, they're just hitting each other with a frying pan. I mean, it's funny, but it's not that funny.
Okay. Yeah, my wife sometimes says, like, why are you letting our kids watch Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote? It's like, yeah, so they're hitting each other with, like, frying pans, strapping rockets to their back. It's all good. It's fine.
I mean, 10 minutes later, your children are probably, like, beating each other with the same thing. They totally are. But I feel like they would do it anyway.
That was such a huge controversy when I was a kid. There were kids in my neighborhood who weren't allowed to watch particular cartoons because they were so violent. Because apparently, children are so stupid that they would then try and do that.
I mean, some children are very stupid. Well, okay, Let's be fair. Like, maybe. I was stupid as a child. I wouldn't have done those things. Was it you, Andrew, or was it your wife that was saying, like, you weren't allowed to watch, like, The Simpsons growing up, or...
That was probably my wife, because I was watching The Simpsons and stuff.
And I knew, and I had friends too, like, that was a very controversial show when it came out. And if you watch it now, it's one of my favorite shows of all time.
Same here, but Bart is so disrespectful.
I know.
Well, except for not really anymore. Watch any live action television show now with kids in it.
Yeah.
They're awful.
Exactly.
They're awful. They're always the smartest people in the room. They tell their parents off. They snark at them. It's like The Simpsons is nothing compared to this.
We are teaching our children to be way too confident these days. That's what it is. Because that's what those television shows are. Those kids always have, like, they're in rock bands and they're, like, running their own skate shops and stuff. That's not a realistic goal. That's dangerous.
Yeah, I know with our oldest son, we are trying to instill some of these respectful qualities. But it doesn't seem like it's coming through. And he seems like he knows everything. Like, you could tell him... Hey, I'm trying to think of something we did.
The problem here is that Uncle Rai Rai comes over and teaches him the fart jokes. That's his, you can say it, Andrew. It's my fault.
I mean, there was something tonight at dinner. It's like, whatever. I think my wife has finally resigned to trying to stop it and just embracing it. Because he was at his table. This is a little off topic here, but I think it's a good almost dad moment. Where he was at the table, he was like, it smells over here. My wife asked, did you fart? And he was like, yeah.
And that's adorable.
Did he have just the little smirk on his face too? Yes, there you go. Perfect.
The son that he's talking about is Chris Farley. He is a little Chris Farley. He's adorable. And your other son reminds me so much of David Spade. Like, hey.
Oh, wow.
It's the perfect Halloween costume. It really is.
Maybe not this year. That will eventually happen.
It has to. Because the one is very, like, the oopsie. And your other son is the very, like, straight-laced, like, no. Has to be this way.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chris Farley and David Spade all the way. It's hilarious. So, rounding back around here to kind of, like wrap up our final thoughts on this. Because I think we've dissected lots of layers to this and lots of elements to it. What do you feel is the most, I don't know what I say, not the most dangerous, but what is the most disturbing? Well, that's a tough word too. Man, there's all these words. I need better adjectives. What do you feel is the one thing that kind of sticks out in your mind that's like a cultural thing right now that you see children doing or you've seen them become more comfortable with? That bothers you the most, or that, like, kind of the one thing that makes you question, like, is that going to have a bad effect going forward? Is it the video games? Is it the cell phone usage? Is it the entertainment? What's, like, the one thing that kind of sticks out to you?
Oh, Lord. I think I'm just going to have to go back to how much.
Just the quantity.
Yeah. I'm not one of those people who believes that violent video games make kids violent. I think that's crap.
I have an awesome story for this. I have to interject this real quick. Uh-huh. Because Tess, you were the first person, and I will never forget this. It was seventh grade. I'm sitting in computer lab class, right? And I was talking with somebody, and we were talking about Final Fantasy VII, mm-hmm. and you walked over and just started, like, entered into the conversation so flawlessly. And I had never prior to that moment realized that, like, teachers were allowed to play video games. And I remember my jaw probably hit the floor because she just walked over and was just immediately, like, discussing, like, tactics and things in Final Fantasy VII. And I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. It blew my mind.
That's what comes of looking over your son's shoulder while he is playing video games.
Well, you weren't just looking over the shoulder, though. You were playing.
I was not playing.
Really?
No.
You got that much from just watching him.
I just watched him.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I mean, it's a great game. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I would have sworn that, like, you had to have been, like, playing it or sneaking in after we went to bed or something and busting out the PlayStation.
You kidding? I bailed Asteroids with Atari is as far as I ever got with video games.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
I would have. I definitely. I guess I always thought, like, in the back of my head, like, man, Tess goes home at the end of the night and she's totally sneaking in and playing her son's PlayStation. And that's awesome.
Not quite.
But it's still cool because that at least shows that you were involved in what he was doing. And I think that's even more commendable that you were able to pull that much detail out of a thing that you weren't, like, actively doing. And that shows, kind of goes back to the point of, yeah, we don't just want to, like, sit our kids down in front of this stuff and let
there
them.
There it is. Exactly. And you've got to, you have to stay involved with them and make sure they're involved with each other. And I think that's more the point than anything else. You know, something Andrew said really early in this, I have been percolating in the back of my head, excuse me, about kids knowing how to use the technology, that, you know, that we're immersed in it now. They're going to be more immersed in it then. They're growing up with it, you know, more comfortable. It's part of their lives. Here's the thing. I was the first teacher at my school to embrace Google Classroom. When I first heard about it, I went, oh my God, this is awesome. It's kind of like Blackboard Lite, if you know anything about it.
Yeah.
And I was using it in my freshman English classes. And, you know, the kids got their assignments electronically. They typed them on the iPad. They turned them in electronically. It was awesome, except for I was absolutely stunned by these kids who had no idea how to format an essay, how to actually use punctuation, how to capitalize, because all they ever did was text. Now, who spells out anything in text? Who uses okay, I use punctuation in text.
I try to do that as much as I can.
Oh, I'm so proud of you.
I do, too, because it bothers me. And I think because, again, like, we probably were the last generation that... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're kind of on the cusp.
You're the cusp. Yeah, exactly. But I guess that's, you know, when we're talking about that they have to know how to use it, that's part of it. I was really blown away by kids who I thought were digital natives, and they would just take like ducks to water to this Google Classroom. Didn't.
I'm shocked.
Yeah.
I'm shocked. Drop my leg, sorry. I'm shocked by that, too, because I would definitely have thought the contrary, that would not be the situation there. And going back to the comment that I made earlier about knowing how to write a resume, when I was in management several years ago, it was always disheartening that we would, you know, I was the person that was doing the hiring and stuff, so I'd be going through resumes, and you'd have these kids that were like 17, 18 years old, and you're looking at the resume, and you're just like, oh, man. I want to bring them in and talk to them just because they have to be more fascinating than the three words that they put for, like for answers on a resume. And it just dawned on me, like, do they not teach this in school? Do they not teach it, like, kids how to do these things? Because they should. And I guess to me, like, when I was at that age that I had to write my first resume for a job, I got online and I figured out how to do it. I mean, there's endless knowledge that's available at our fingertips all the time. And even when I was at that age doing that, it was there. So I think that just because the technology is present doesn't mean that kids know the proper way to utilize it.
Exactly.
And that's very interesting that you say that it was that obvious with that scenario. I would have thought the exact opposite too. I thought that this would be an easy transition.
Yeah, I thought I was doing them a favor, and the struggles were amazing.
That is shocking.
Yep.
Yeah, that is kind of hard to believe with some of those in the classroom with. I mean, they've probably been on their phones for, what, 3-4 years at the time and trying to deal with that stuff, and then they can't just sit down and write a paper.
Yeah. That's great. What does it do, formatting and stuff for you? I don't know how.
No, but that's what they expected.
Oh, so I would have expected that.
Absolutely. Well, you've used Google Docs, right?
Oh yeah, all the time.
Exactly. So you know you have to know something about it. You put all the words down there. Yeah, that's great. But then you have to know how to indent a paragraph if that's the style that you're working in, or only put one space after a period, not two. And oh yeah, use a period.
I never even considered that side of it because I guess if you're only growing up experiencing auto spelling and spell correction, all those kind of things, I guess I never really even considered the thought of you're never going to learn even remote proper grammar.
You know what we're teaching them probably still. I've been out of the classroom now for 2 years. And they're probably still being taught keyboarding as opposed to how to use the tool, use Google Docs to make an actual document, how to format it, how to capitalize this or put the title in the center or whatever it is.
Very true. That's very interesting.
So again, there it is in their hands, but it's up to us to mold that, to show them how to do it.
I imagine that's probably going to be a difficult, especially for us as our children get older, because I wonder how much stuff I've forgotten that I'm not even thinking about.
Well, I was just thinking with what you've been saying, it's like, how much are my kids going to be able to use a keyboard or a typewriter instead of just like a screen? Like, I know I can type on a keyboard fast and do what I need to, but how many times are kids going to just be like touch typing or just with their thumbs trying to type something?
I don't think they'll be using keyboards at all by the time they're your age. I think everything will be voice.
Well,
I mean, we're close to that now.
Talking to Google in my house every day.
Exactly.
all these things become more and more prevalent. I would think that there's almost an argument, you know, for video games and stuff in that aspect, because we're probably never going to get away from as far as PCs go, having that be like an input for video games and that kind of things. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's not an entertainment medium that's going away, but yeah, that's a weird thought of kind of what the future holds for that. And kind of what's the crazy next thing, when are we going to have like the head strap that just reads our mind and, you know, we don't even have to like think about it. Well, we do. We would have to think about it, but not really think about it, for those things to just like flow out.
Sure.
Because that'll be the next thing. Right? Yeah.
Well, I'm just actually trying to process some of that. And I know me personally, I don't think I would want to dictate a paper. I would probably feel more comfortable typing it out or doing something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of hard to see what our kids would want to do.
You know, that's how I felt, though, when I first got into the Google Home stuff. My fear was, I mean, I was really excited to get it, but my fear was, okay, I'm going to get this. It's going to be a novelty thing. I'll use it 2 times. My wife will hate it. And then it's just going to sit there collecting dust, or I'll use it for a Bluetooth speaker that I already have like 15 other ones up. But because it worked so well, and because I was able to hook so many other things up to it, now I do it without even thinking. And my wife, who's I never in a million years would have thought would have been even remotely interested in it, we both use it constantly. So I would say the same thing, that I wouldn't want to do that. But I wonder if there was a device that came along or a technology that came along that made it comfortable and made it efficient. Would that change my mind? That maybe I would want to sit around and just talk to myself and have it dictate my thoughts.
I don't know.
Scary, but
I feel like a lot of that technology has to come a lot further. I don't feel like it's anywhere where it would need to be for that. Because me and my wife have said here recently that our Google is almost like a fifth child that's not listening to us half the time.
Maybe you're not talking to it right. My Google is very nice to me, Andrew. Sometimes she's a little snarky with her answers, but
Yeah, it seems like we've had, I don't know what the issue is, but here recently I hasn't wanted to turn off the lights unless you say it a certain way, and it really is getting frustrating.
It really is. That sound like a kid then too. I feel like if you ask your kids to turn off the light, you probably struggle with that too some days, right?
I feel like our kids do a better job of it than us do sometimes. So that's why it's like, yeah, the kids are just talking to themselves. And when I ask Google to do something, it's like, I don't know what you meant.
She's like, I'm not listening today.
I'm sorry. I can't help you with that right now.
So technology is terrible. This is what we all landed on this one. Technology is scary.
No,
that's not the point. That was why I thought we were going with this. That technology was terrifying and scary.
But from this video, I feel that it's the biggest, I guess, impact of it is how much it's changed in the last 20 years, or kids' generations, compared to the two older generations that are represented there.
And obviously, I think that at the end of the day, that's more what they're trying to say is, hey, this is changed. But at the same time, my reaction to that is still like, oh, duh. I mean, like, these things are always changing. And we discussed there's going to be some other thing that comes down the road that's going to spur the conversation again.
What's the name of the principle that talks about how exponentially fast things will change? It's
Moore's Law?
That's it. Yes. Yes.
Dude, that was quick, man.
Yeah, I knew it was an M. Yeah,
Moore's Law, I think it's basically states that every 18 months, like when it comes to computers and stuff, it doubles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think they're saying that that's kind of hit a barrier, but once, because in our past, like processors have really like doubled every 18 months pretty regularly. But once it gets, they're talking about a hurdle now, but I don't know if it's just technology wise what's going on. But if they get over this, it's probably going to go to holographics or something like crazy like that.
Well, I know.
So it is changing faster.
It's changing very fast. Absolutely. But like you were saying, like I was reading recently, like, as far as processor or processing power goes, that you know we've almost reached the cap of what's physically possible to cram into a microprocessor. But then again, we're looking at nanoprocessors and things like computers that we can embed into cells.
Well, there was something here recently that they said that they were able to make a transistor about the size of like a couple atoms or the size of an atom.
Yeah.
So, I mean, while they can't mass produce something like that, and they still got some hurdles there, the technology is still working its way to get even smaller and even faster.
So, wow. So we have to worry about like the nano machine robots.
Skynet.
It all goes back to Skynet.
Absolutely.
Where's Alex Jones when you need him? This that is the fascinating that they, you know, again, these kind of things that we're looking at that are like sci-fi right now to us, the stuff that we have, the cell phone in our pocket was sci-fi 20 years ago.
That. Absolutely.
I mean, who would have, I don't even know. I'd like as a child imagining having that kind of stuff in the pocket of my hand, the Nintendo Switch we talked about, child Ryan would have lost his mind at the thought of how cool that is.
Well, even the idea, I'm going to get into Star Trek, where they had that tablet going on in the Next Generation. That was like crazy back then. And now we're
like, who cares?
We have that. And I'm like, meh.
We were watching the Next Generation just a couple of weeks ago. And my husband kind of snickered and said, hey, look, they have iPads.
Like, yeah, they it's have like cool anymore, man.
Yeah.
I've never seen Star Trek. Had that.
Wait, what?
I know. I told
can't be friends anymore.
I know. Look, there's so much. It's one of those things that seems daunting to get into. I'm not saying I wouldn't be interested in it. I was a Star Wars guy personally. But we were with the network that we're on, they were doing one of their live shows and talking about Star Trek. And I commented, like, does this mean I get kicked out because I've never seen Star Trek? Because everybody was, you were super excited about the new Star Trek, or I don't know who's coming back, or.
Oh my gosh, he doesn't even know who's coming back.
I
don't even
know. I'm sorry. I couldn't remember his name. Patrick Stewart, yes.
I personally think some of your Greek cred is diminished a little bit by not.
Look, I'll accept
it. At least not knowing about it.
I know what it is, but I couldn't tell you. This is a whole other conversation that's going to get me in lots of trouble, I feel. Look, I respect it. I would totally watch it. It just seems daunting at this point to jump in because there's so much content. I had a guy years ago that I worked with that tried to, like, he wanted me to watch Dragon Ball Z, And which I don't even care about anime at all, but like, I was like, sure, bring me one thing that you want me to watch. And he brought me like 17 DVDs and like four movies. And he's like, this is season one. I'm like, no, no. Who wants to start that? That's ridiculous.
You got to start somewhere though.
I know, but I guess like if I would have grew up with it, maybe like it would have been more, you know, this is all still stays relevant. Like, I didn't grow up with that. That wasn't a technology that I was familiar with, the Star Trek-ness. I was watching Ewoks and Wookiees and stuff and Star Wars. Okay, that's where I was at. This wasn't a Star Trek kid.
Okay.
All right. I'm sorry, guys.
I mean, I must have had too much screen time.
There it is. You know what? We can always bring our tangents right back.
That's
around.
That's it. It was always on in the house, and Dan, from the time he was a little boy, watched Star Trek with his mom.
There you go.
So yeah.
And he's then you watched Final Fantasy VII with him.
Exactly.
That's adorable. That's adorable.
My it's a bonding moment. That kind of
thing. So, yeah. So, I think we've probably reached the conclusion for this week's episode. Tess, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking.
It was a lot of fun.
It was fun.
I knew as soon as you posted that and like we kind of like started commenting, I was reading some of other people's comments. Uh-huh. I know she would probably do this.
Boy, did I really tick some people off or what?
Really? You know what? That was one of the interesting things. I was very shocked by how personal people took it. And I was like, I didn't know that this was that like deep of a conversation. It seems like it's pretty much a normal thing, but you're right. There were some comments that I was like, whoa, calm down. Like,
well, I think this gets back to what Tess was saying earlier, that people are willing to say whatever they want when you don't really know who they are.
Well, yeah, I mean, but like, good even point. When you know somebody, like, you have to learn how to use the word filter that a lot of us don't have within the age. What, you know, I feel like again with our generation and your generation, like we were there at the beginning of the internet. Mm-hmm. We saw it as a tadpole, and then we saw it as it grew into this grotesque monster. That there is good things hiding in it, but still a grotesque monster of like awful things that exist on it. And I think for us, it's a lot easier to distinguish. You know, we talked about. I definitely want to do like how do we do proper research in the age of the internet? That's a topic that's going to be coming down. I'm so passionate about that.
Yeah, I have a couple thoughts on that. We'll get to that later.
Well, that's gonna be a good episode. I would love to do that because you know, especially when we look at Facebook, you see the things that. Which, by the way, Facebook is totally not even like our generation anymore. The baby boomers like took over Facebook completely.
Yep.
My aunts and my mom post on Facebook more than I ever. I don't even post anything hardly on Facebook anymore. It's not cool anymore. It's like it's your generation stole it from us, Tess. They stole Facebook.
You offered us something really awesome. We had no choice.
I don't even know what's cool anymore. I'm sure there's something cool that I'm not on anymore. But regardless, I'll go on there and I see the things that my family post, and I'm like, what? No, come on! Did you even try to look into this before you posted that? That's just the dumbest thing. And that's what sparked my interest. It would be an interesting conversation to just talk about. You know, what's the bare minimum that we can do to do research?
Oh, I would listen the heck out of that particular podcast.
There you go. So maybe I'll have to bring you back for that one, because I feel like your input would be very important in that, because you taught that very subject.
Yes.
So, I think that it's important to instill those skills and instill those values of how to do that kind of stuff as technology and as parents. Andrew, any other thoughts? Any final?
I think that's about it for now.
Tess, anything else to throw in?
That's it.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tess.
My pleasure. This was fun.
We wanted to say thank you again for Tess Wigginton joining us on today's episode. That was a very interesting conversation. I had a lot of fun with that one.
Yeah, kind of went a little bit beyond that Nature Valley video, but it was a great take on her perspective of the different generations since she's been in the classroom with this generation.
And I think that all of our tangents, though, actually were very easy to tie back to the main topic through the video at hand. So I think that we can actually get away with tangents on a topic like that. That worked pretty good. And we mentioned being a part of the Gonna Geek Network, and we did want to take a minute to call attention to the Gallifrey Public Radio Podcast. Gallifrey Public Radio is a weekly podcast that covers all topics in the Doctor Who universe. I can't mess that up. Doctor Who universe. I don't know where my mouth went with that. From episode discussions to classic story appreciation to comics, conventions, and audio dramas.
The GPR staff spans the decades and regenerations with views from the hardcore enthusiast to the fledgling fan and all points in between.
Andrew, are you a fan of Doctor Who?
I am not. What do they call them? Whovians? Is that it? Am I making that up?
I have no idea. Sounds right. I've never watched Doctor Who either, and I feel like that's another one of those I lose nerd cred.
I think we're both losing nerd cred for this one.
So I need to watch Star Trek. And what was the other one that we talked about after we...
Yeah, we were talking with Tess a little bit afterwards, and she said before you watch Star Trek and probably Doctor Who, make sure you watch Firefly and the movie Serenity.
I got an audible gasp when they found out that I had not seen Serenity or Firefly. I have tons of respect. I know it's good. I mean, everyone loses their mind when they talks about it, but I've never sat down to watch it. So you know what? I'll have to make some time to go back and relive some of these classic sci-fi cultural cornerstones here. So
I think that's going to be all for this week. If you need to, you can catch us on our website at thedatiopodcast.com, or you can check out all of our other information too on our Facebook page at facebook.com/datiopodcast.
And we are also on Twitter at datiopodcast, and you can also find our personal Twitter links there as well. Join the conversation. Let us know what you think. What did you think when you watched this ad? It will be linked in the show notes today. Go check it out. Let us know what your thoughts are. I think that this is definitely a topic that spans all generations and all different, you know, cultures and interests. Everybody has an opinion on this one.
And I'm sure if you are a parent, you probably have some opinions about this ad. And we'd like to hear some of your opinions. To let us know what you think about the technology gap between all of us.
So reach out to us, join in the conversation. And thank you again for listening. For this week of the Dad IO podcast, I'm Ryan.
And I'm Andrew.
Have a lovely weekend.